From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 142 with guest Laura Hunter, recorded Monday, December 21st, 2009. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow the boys on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. You're listening to Run As Radio, and with me, as always, my co-host, Greg Hughes.
Hey, Richard. Hey, everyone. Hey, what's going on?
Oh, you know, end of the year?
Yes, it is.
Well, by the time this show is published, it's now 2010, so, and all the wonders amongst.
I guess it's one of those dates that just kind of makes you stop and think, what?
We're already living in a science fiction novel, man. I was chatting with a friend of mine who's in Stockholm while I'm in Vancouver on Instant Messenger, and we're arguing about a particular book, and I pick up my Kindle and download the book so that I can reference the quote he's talking about. The whole thing takes place in 30 seconds, and then you have that moment where you're like, wow, you know, that is kind of cool, actually.
But, you know, I'm still waiting. There's a couple of things that I'm still waiting for, and one of them is like on the Enterprise, you know, they had that little thing they'd walk up to in the corner of the room, and they would, like, wave their hand or push some buttons, and, like, scrambled eggs would magically appear.
Yeah.
Or baked goose or whatever it is they wanted, so I'm kind of waiting for that.
Yeah, you want that one. It's a few things that haven't come along just yet. Well, there you go. Let's actually do a show. What the heck?
Yeah.
Let me introduce our guest. Laura Hunter is a directory services MVP and an architect working in the areas of Active Directory, Federated Identity, and Identity Management. She's the principal consulting for LHA Consulting Incorporated, blogs at www.shutuplaura.com, and Twitters at LHA Consulting. Welcome back, Laura.
Hey, Laura.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Well, we've been having some adventures in Active Directory land, as I understand.
Oh, very much so. We've had the with the recent Wave 10 release, as they call it, with Server 2008 R2 and Win 7 shipping. We've got a whole slew of new features in Active Directory that people like me to go out and start deploying to our clients. And you know, for folks who are still running in Win 2000 and Win 2003, now that 2008 R2 is out, people can now look back and say, okay, guess 2008 is safe now.
Right,
so
right.
It's good news all around.
Although, as I understand it, the big deal here, especially when you're talking from a group policy perspective, is the client operating system. Getting Win 7 onto desktops gives you way more control over group policy.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Win 7 on the client is just going to be an amazing thing to see, because for good, bad, or indifferent, a lot of organizations never made the change to Vista.
Right.
And so you've got a lot of companies out there that are still running XP, Windows XP Service Pack 2, Windows XP Service Pack 3, which is, how old is that operating system now? It's approaching 8 or 9 years old
operating
now.
Operating system.
Yeah, 2001 was the original edition. I would argue that SP2 was actually a new OS, but even that was 2005.
Absolutely. Right. So you've got all these organizations out there who are running a very stable but very long in the tooth operating system, and they're just now starting to see what really interesting things they can start doing in terms of controlling their clients and, you know, what's the Microsoft speak, optimizing their user experience.
Right.
And I think the move to Win 7 is going to really make a lot of organizations very happy, because in a lot of ways, Win 7 is the thing that we wanted Vista to be, but it wasn't.
Right.
It's got all the pretty and all the shiny and the stable all at the same time.
Yeah. It's got a, remember when Windows 2000 workstation shipped, and it was that final consolidation between NT and the 9 set, and it just felt so good. Like, it really was a sturdy, robust version. Of course, you know, then XP came along, and it was Windows 2000 with the Fisher-Price interface.
Right.
But 2000 was the one that made me smile. And I feel like that about Win 7, too. It's just there. It works. It's not a big deal. Like, let's move on.
I just really like how intuitive the Win 7 interface is. I was sitting at a client site the other day, and, you know, CEO had just put Win 7 on his laptop for the first time, And he asked me a question. He said, what happened to the screen where you would set file associations? You know, maybe you wanted a .txt file opening with PrimalScript instead of Notepad or something.
Right.
You know, where did that screen go? I can't find it. And I sat back. I was like, I don't actually know where that is now. So I click the start, and I go to the little run line, little search line, and I type change file associations, and I hit enter. And the control panel window pops up. And it was that simple.
It just figured out what you wanted and did it for you.
And it figured out what I wanted, and it gave me exactly what I wanted. And of course, the CEO, because, you know, he's a geek and he's a tinkerer, he said, well, what screening control panel was that? And I said, I don't know. I asked the search line for it, and it gave it to me. I'm paying on that point. I don't care.
I don't need to know. It just works.
That's really cool. You know, can I do a jump back question real quick? This conversation, I've heard this conversation a few times, and if we have an Active Directory guru on the line, then let's just ask this one. This is a very basic question, but people will often confuse, at least in conversational terms, and I think it's a lot of people who don't have a lot of experience with Active Directory, but they'll think that a domain and Active Directory are the same thing.
They'll think that a domain and Active Directory are the same thing.
Or somehow they think that it's all tied together as one big thing. How would you explain to somebody, you know, maybe that's used to working with, you know, work group computers and stuff, what is a domain and what is Active Directory?
Sure, absolutely. And that's a very common conception to have, because something like 80 or 90% of all Active Directory deployments in corporate environments are going to be a single domain,
right?
Active Directory. So it's very easy to just look at that and say, there's my domain, there's my Active Directory. But when Active Directory was being developed by the product group back in, you know, the late 90s, I suppose, it was this idea of being able to create a very scalable directory service, and a lot more scalable than what we had with NT351 and Windows NT4. For anyone who can date themselves back that far, one of the major weaknesses of Windows NT was its scalability. You had that the database file, which couldn't exceed 40 megs in size.
Right.
There were facets of NT4 replication where essentially you just couldn't have a single NT4 domain going across WAN boundaries. It just the performance just got impossible for you. And so what the product group did with Active Directory was they designed this directory service. Well, they based it off of LDAP. This directory service that could scale to literally millions and millions of objects. I think the theoretical maximum number of objects in any Active Directory environment is 2^31 minus 255, which, if you punch that into your calculator, is a really big number.
Yeah, and it's almost enough for Exchange.
I know. Check that out. And so when you think about Active Directory versus a domain, you can think of a domain as the primary organizational piece of Active Directory. It's the when you install Active Directory for the first time, you're installing a new domain. And that domain is an administrative boundary that contains more than one domain controller, which is going to house the user accounts and the computer accounts, your usernames and your passwords and your groups and all the stuff that you think of when you think of Active Directory. Now, as I said, for a lot of organizations, a single domain is going to get you there, and it's going to be all that you're ever going to see. But there are going to be certain situations because of organizational requirements, because of bandwidth requirements, because of geographical requirements, where you might have multiple domains configured within a single Active Directory. You might think of, for example, if you're running Active Directory on a bunch of oil rigs. You know, these things are largely physically disconnected from the rest of the world. Maybe they've got a satellite link that hooks them up, you know, once an hour or, you know, four times a day or something. You're not going to want to have that single Active Directory domain trying to replicate and trying to pass information from, you know, this oil rig to that oil rig back to corporate headquarters all the time in a very chatty sort of manner. And so you might segregate all these different locations into separate domains to create an administrative boundary, to create also a replication boundary, so that these kind of isolated, so that these kind of isolated places can manage themselves and can operate in almost in not really a standalone fashion, because they've all got to talk to each other to a certain extent. But it does allow for, it does allow you to create administrative boundaries within a single Active Directory.
And that was the big trick here. Of course, this has advanced a lot now, because in 2008, we finally got the read-only domain controller. So it's becoming easier and easier to have branch offices still run well in the AD environment.
Absolutely. And if you look at the guidance that's come out of Microsoft back in the 2000-2003 era, you would see a recommendation of creating an Active Directory that had what they called an empty forest root domain, which contained effectively just a couple of administrative accounts, and then child domains, so a separate domain for each of your geographical entities, each of your organizational entities. Because of things like read-only domain controllers, because of improvements that that they've made in the algorithms that are used to replicate information back and forth, because of the security implications of having multiple domains within a single forest, that best practice recommendations have now matured, have now changed to the point of the de facto place that you're going to begin from when you're designing an Active Directory. If you're in, you know, like a greenfield deployment, if you're standing up brand new, or if you're migrating into a new environment, is start from a single domain. You know, start from a single domain forest, start from a single domain Active Directory, and then only branch out into multiple child domains if you've got a really compelling need to do so.
Gotcha. So what's the great stuff that's now available, you know, in Wave 10? What are we getting that we didn't have before?
So the Active Directory goodness in Wave 10, the biggest and the most visible update in 2008 R2 is the Active Directory Recycle Bin, which is exactly what it sounds like. It creates a very easy, a very simple way to recover deleted objects within an Active Directory domain. You know, someone deletes a user object accidentally, someone deletes even an entire OU or an entire container accidentally. Prior to 2008 R2, the restore scenario was you had to reboot your domain controller into this special single user mode. You had to go find your backup tape, pray your backup tape worked, you know, roll back all the changes, and then mark those changes as what we call marking those changes to be authoritative. In 2008 R2, with the introduction of the recycle bin, it's not quite the client desktop recycle bin experience where you just double click on a folder and go right click restore. It's actually done through PowerShell. It's done through here as a PowerShell commandlet. But it becomes a lot simpler to restore either a single object or an entire container's worth of objects, using a very simple PowerShell syntax that brings back the objects, brings back all of their attributes, brings back any of their links to other attributes. One kind of sticking point in Active Directory restore scenarios was, okay, I've brought back this user, but this user was a member of a bunch of other groups. And now how do I restore the links to those other groups that he used to be a member of? And that gets even worse if I've deleted both the user and the groups, or the groups but not the user, and you can see where the permutations can get sort of complex from there. So that's kind of the big one. And in describing that, I mentioned the feature that has a similar billing to that, which is the Active Directory PowerShell module that's been released for 2008 R2, which is an actual fully fledged get-AD user set-AD group module of a number of different commandlets that are all adhering to that verb-noun PowerShell syntax, and these are built directly into the operating system. We've had the ability to do PowerShell management in Active Directory prior to R2,
right,
but it's either been a matter of downloading freeware PowerShell commandlets from Quest and from some folks in the community, like Darren Morelia, did a bunch of PowerShell commandlets for group policy. But these are now built directly into the operating system.
And most folks that I talked to were working with PowerShell, of course, referenced Active Directory because that's where you get all your users and so forth, but it was mostly to act on something else.
Mm-hmm.
So it's you didn't see a lot of how do I make mass modifications to PowerShell or to Active Directory data itself using PowerShell.
Yep. And now with the commandlets that are built into R2, you now have the ability to do any number of the normal, I'd say probably 90% or even more of the normal everyday administrative tasks that you would expect someone to do in a GUI. There's now the PowerShell equivalent for that. You can create a user, you can delete a user, you can create a group, add a user to a group, remove a user from a group. You know, you can manage your domain controllers. You can manage you just talked about RODCs. There's an entire bunch of commandlets talking about them. Talking about managing RODCs and behavior that's specific to RODCs. As I said, the PowerShell commandlets are built into 2008 R2, so any R2 domain controller is going to have these commandlets built right into them. There's also an out-of-band download that's up on the TechNet download site, so that you can download these commandlets. Effectively, they're going to be hosted via a web service. And so that'll make those commandlets also available for 2008 and 2003 domain controllers. Just to be very clear, when I say web service, because I know that from the IT pro perspective, this was the first thing that I was afraid of when I heard this. The fact that the PowerShell commandlets are running via a web service does not mean that we're installing IIS on our domain controllers.
Right.
Because, well, that's a bad thing, and we try not to do that. This is a very specific, very purpose-built web service, runs over one very specific port, the number of which is, of course, completely eluding me right now, but it is neither 80 nor 443.
Okay. And, yeah, these are just commandlets that we can add into the older versions of server. We don't have to have R2 to get these things.
Correct. You don't have to have R2 to run these commandlets. You do, however, need to have at least one domain controller that will support these commandlets, and that means either you've got a 2008 R2 domain controller, or you've got a 2003 or 2008 DC that's running this web service that's been put up on the download site.
Okay,
cool.
And so we just put that in, and off we go. And I'm just looking at the list of commandlets here. They get QAD server or user, set QAD user. Like, these are all the real core kind of things you want to do for managing AD directly. Do you do this mostly in PowerShell these days, Laura? I mean, you do a lot of management to this, or is it better to use the GUI? Like, what do you like?
It really depends on my audience. If I'm working with kind of a smaller organization, who are very comfortable with and who are very familiar with working with the GUI, then I'm going to keep them at their comfort level, and I'm going to keep folks, you know, working with things that are comfortable with them. However, I do have this theory that as soon as you need to do something twice, you should find a way to automate it. And so if you're dealing with a large organization or an organization that has a lot of churn in their database, you're creating a lot of users, you're deleting a lot of users, or you're just making a lot of changes to your database, then you're absolutely going to find, you know, some efficiencies in moving away from always using the GUI to do these tasks and then moving towards using really any kind of command line script, any sort of command line scripting solution. I mean, I know there are folks that are crazy about PowerShell. There are folks that can take or leave PowerShell, but, you know, PowerShell is not the only way to get there. There are any number of other command line tools that you can use to automate your Active Directory management. And again, I think if you're going to be doing any sort of task more than once in a week, more than once in a day, you know, whatever is your, your productivity comfort level is there, then I think there's definitely value in learning how to do things from a command line, from a scripted perspective, not only because it makes you more efficient, but it also makes you less error prone. You know, how many different ways can you spell the name Kennebunkport, for example?
Right. Yeah, so just having all that apparent when you go along. I like the way that PowerShell tends to just naturally journal all the steps you took.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot simpler than trying to Camtasia a bunch of GUI.
Certainly, and the PowerShell commandlets for Active Directory are just like any of the other ones in that they are they're extremely discoverable. You know, if I wanted to create a user, then I would type new dash and then start hitting tab until I see the command that I think makes a lot of sense for me. And if I don't have all the right parameters in place, if I hit enter and my parameters are incomplete, it's going to start prompting me for, oh, you forgot this parameter. Give me the same account name for the user. Give me the distinguished name for the user. It's going to start prompting me for any of the parameters that I forgot, rather than just spewing back an OE error message and saying, nope, you got it wrong. Start over again.
Right.
That's cool.
It's easier to follow along with that. I'm a little frustrated with the whole naming strategy of server 2008 R2, because I'm finding that R2 is not a minor version of 2008. It was not a small upgrade. Like, there's more to it than that.
There's certainly a lot of goodness to be found there. Even if we get away from the Active Directory piece, for an example, you even look at something like Direct Access. Direct access is just going to change your world. It's just going to completely rock your world, but it does make non-trivial assumptions of your infrastructure.
Yeah.
So I think you're absolutely right that bringing direct access into an environment is going to be a major change. But, with change comes added goodness.
Things like
direct access and things like the new AD features. You know, they're just going to open up all kinds of new worlds for people.
Well, and I'm looking at managed service accounts as really powerful stuff too, but not that simple to just drop into play.
Oh, sure, and that's another one of the new features that we get with Active Directory is this idea of creating a specialized type of user object that has a password that you as the administrator never actually need to manage.
Yeah.
It's not like you look at how you create applications now. You create a username to run your application. Hopefully you set it with a nice long complex password and then you set it to never expire because frankly, it's not even that you're lazy. It's that we always do that.
Yeah. You're never going to look at it again.
Expire. Yeah. Because you don't want your app failing at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, the nanosecond that password expires. So you set the password to never expire, and you say to yourself that you're going to log in and change that password every 3 months or every 6 months, and then at that point you get lazy and you never do it. And managed service accounts really gets you away from that because it creates a specialized type of user account where Active Directory will, on your behalf, every 30 days in the background, go in, change the password to something like 240-character complex monstrosity of a password.
It'll
change the password on your behalf. It'll go into the services MSC and will change the password on the account and restart the service for you so that you never even notice that it happened. Maybe you get a little 5-second blip while it restarts the service.
So the service that's running on Windows, the Windows service knows what the new password is, but that account can't be leveraged by a malicious third-party program that's not directly controlled by the system that's doing the password change.
Well, it's still a user object and it still has that password. So if the password is out there, it certainly can be cracked, but it's a 240 character complex password. Good luck cracking that with any kind of modern computing. And even more than that, your administrators never know it. Your developers never know it, your end users never know it, and that's really the danger of service accounts. The danger of service accounts is the fact that you have the service account that maybe once upon a time it had a nice complex password, but it has now had that password for the last 5 years, and every single member of the DBA team and every member of the IT admin team and every developer now knows this password. That's really your danger there.
Right. And when we make service accounts in the lazy model that we've been discussing, quite often what people do is they'll go out and they'll just create a regular Windows user account and not restrict the account. You know, they'll still have logon local privileges and what have you. But this is a completely different class of user account, right?
Absolutely. It's actually, strangely enough, a type of computer account. And computer accounts within Active Directory actually have their own passwords and have that sort of 240 character password that is, again, managed by Active Directory. But because computer objects inherit from user objects in the whole developer framework scheme of things, managed service accounts will also inherit all of the attributes and all of the behaviors of a user account, so that they can go out and run applications just like any kind of service account that you might manually create as an admin.
Gotcha.
Well, and just making them not have the password so they can't abuse the account. Plus, it totally breaks wrench cryptography, right? That whole problem goes away.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and the problem goes away of trying to log onto a machine one day and, you know, trying to log onto one of your production servers and seeing that someone has logged on as a service account.
Right.
Well, guess what? You just lost auditability. You just lost accountability. Anyone who can log on as that service account, you know, there's no repudiation there.
Yeah.
That person can log on locally to a server as this account, which likely has some rather extensive privileges, and they can go do anything they want and claim they didn't do it, because how are you going to prove it?
Yeah, no. That was a runaway application misbehaving.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so just keeping those things completely separated. Active Directory Management Gateway Services. I'm just starting to play with this now. Maybe you fill us in. It's one of the other big new features.
So with the Management Gateway Service is that is going to be that web service that we just talked about for the PowerShell module. So
mm-hmm.
that is the web service that it runs natively on your 2008 R2 domain controllers. Because it's not just PowerShell that's going to be accessing and administering Active Directory through this web service. It's also going to be the new Active Directory Administrative Center, which is the new it's kind of the new and improved ADUC. It's the new and improved AD Users and Computers.
Yeah,
and
oh,
that
okay.
is also going to be leveraging this this management service. And again, it's going to be an out of band download that you can install on your 2008, your 2003 domain controllers, so that those down-level domain controllers can leverage these new management features. And the goal, as I understand it, moving forward, is that, you know, any of the new PowerShell modules, any of the new administrative tools, rather than hammering directly at the Active Directory database, are going to be leveraging this management service, you know, to do their work.
So is this a service that has public APIs? People can write their own PowerShell or other application interfaces into, or is it really just for the PowerShell commandlets and the new interface from Microsoft?
I haven't seen an API for it, but it would very much surprise me if there wasn't one out there. This is a this is very much something that they want the community to be able to plug into and to be able to write their own management modules, their own extensibility. So I'm sure if you poke around MSDN far enough, you're going to find the documentation on that somewhere.
What about identity management as a big picture topic? I know that you deal with this, right? And I'm sort of deep into a big identity management project. It just happens to be right now. I'm curious, where do you see the identity management story going with the new things that have just come out and that might be on the horizon from Microsoft and from others?
So the thing that the big thing and the big sort of, much as I hate to use this phrase, paradigm shift. You know, I owe somebody a quarter for having used that phrase now. But I think the major change that's coming both from Microsoft as well as from, you know, as well as from third party vendors is this idea that, you know, the cloud is real and the cloud is big and the cloud is coming. And we need to find a way of managing both our identities. The way that we've been managing things up until now, we've always made assumptions. We've always made assumptions that our applications are residing on premises and are joined to an Active Directory domain. Our users are sitting in an Active Directory domain, or they're using certificates, we're making all of these implementation assumptions about our users and about our applications that when we scale out to the cloud model, they really don't apply anymore. My users could be in an on-site Active Directory. They could be sitting up in the cloud. They could be sitting up in Windows Live. They could be sitting, you know, at an open ID somewhere.
Could be all the above.
My applications could be sitting on premises. My applications could be hosted up in Azure. They could be, you know, any combination of the above. and the way that both authentication and authorization are going to need to evolve to deal with that is going to be an interesting thing to watch. Certainly the direction that that Microsoft and a lot of other folks are going in is in pursuing this this idea of a claims-based model. You may have heard of Active Directory Federated Services. It was initially released with 2003 R2 back in 2005. The new release of it, which was codenamed Geneva, actually just shipped. The release candidate just shipped on Friday.
Mm-hmm. Wow!
So, I know the Federated Identity team was working very hard on that, and are now taking the rest of the year off to recover. But that's going to be just. I think that's going to be just a huge thing.
Sorry, Geneva. This is the security token server. So the idea of being able to assert claims and do identity across boundaries in that way.
Exactly. That's exactly what you're looking at. You're looking at the security token service. You're looking at a security token service that can, that will authenticate a user to wherever that user needs to be authenticated. Maybe it's an Active Directory. Maybe it's up in Windows Live. And then once that user is authenticated, we then take that user's information and generate claims, which are in effect, a big old bunch of XML tokens. And then we send those tokens over to an application. And that application can then consume those claims, and the application doesn't really care where those claims came from. It doesn't care if the user was authenticated in AD. It doesn't care if it was authenticated by OpenID. Doesn't much care for the implementation of how that user was authenticated. All the application knows is, I'm getting a bunch of claims. I trust these claims because of whatever security relationship I have with this STS. Maybe we're joined to the same Active Directory domain. Maybe we've traded PKI certificates. But however we got there, I'm getting a bunch of claims, and this claim tells me that this user is a member of the marketing role. And so I'm going to dish out content to this user that's relevant to that role.
So this is going directly to the concept of federated identity then, right? I trust that other authentication mechanism, and I just explicitly trust that it is doing its job well, and therefore whatever it sends me, I am just going to take it face value and leverage.
Yep, absolutely. This up until now has been a very common model in kind of business to business scenarios,
right,
where someone from, you know, Contoso's got the user accounts, Adatum's got the SharePoint, and then the Contoso users can access the SharePoint, the Adatum SharePoint without needing to re-authenticate, without having to have, you know, the administrators in Adatum create separate accounts, create shadow accounts, another set of passwords you got to manage. Blah blah blah. We don't have to do that anymore. It simply creates this federated relationship where Contoso and Adatum organizationally trust one another, and so they're going to. And so at that point, the Adatum SharePoint is then able to accept those incoming claims from those partner users and just make their authorization decisions accordingly.
Gotcha.
Well, guys, I think we're just about out of time. Laura, places we should be looking for more info around ADFS V2 and AD in general?
Good Active Directory resources are Microsoft.com/Active Directory is a very good place to start for the upcoming ADFS V2 launch. Microsoft.com/ADFS V2. Also, the Geneva team's blog, which is on the MSDN blog site, and the name of the blog is CARD. Actually, CARD, because of Windows Card Space, which is a component of ADFS V2, and all kinds of good information to start with from there. And it's all over the Twitter space, and it's all over the blogs, and it's just a good thing. Go all ye forth and federate.
Nice, Laura Hunter. Thanks so much for coming on the show again.
Thank you very much.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.